Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is a Roifield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by managers.
This episode is sponsored by Denise Tomlinson, who donated to Dumpty Dum, so has nominated this charity to be highlighted. To nominate a charity, go to dumptydum.com, hit the donate button, and donate £30 or more. WaterAid. WaterAid started in 1981. They are determined to make clean water, reliable toilets, and good hygiene normal for everyone. Throughout the world, 1 in 10 don't have clean water. 1 in 4 people don't have a decent toilet. But thanks to people's donations, they've reached 26.4 million people with clean water. That's 26.4 million more healthy and independent people in the world. Please go to www.wateraid.org to support them today.
This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that are centered at Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the person who stares at fish, who is Roifield Brown, and with me are the clanging apologetic beers, who is
Kerry Warbis,
and the cold steak and kidney pie, who goes by the name of
Peter Fickling.
And the last part of this week's collection, folks, is you, our lovely listeners. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum is from Cincinnati Steve. Well, Cincinnati Steve's 60th birthday, which happened at some point in 2018. Big apologies to the caller in, who you will hear later, because they sent that to me basically 3 years ago, and I completely and utterly forgot to put it on. And they reminded me, and I found it in the inbox, lurking in a corner. So there you go, Cincinnati Steve. And all of your pals, you've got your moment in the sun. Now, Kerry, if someone else would like to send us in a Dumpty Dum, maybe it's their 60th, could even be their 50th, their 40th, their 30th, their 20th, maybe even their 10th birthday, who knows? And they want to corral some pals together. Well, you can't really do that in lockdown, can you? All crumbs.
Not really. You could do it on a Zoom or something, I suppose, couldn't you?
Oh, the lag. It doesn't work on Zoom. It doesn't work on Zoom because of the lag.
Oh, okay.
Right. Well, if somebody has maybe got an old recording from a birthday, and maybe it was their 50th or the 60th or something or another, and they want to send that in, how do they do that?
Well, if you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on 0203 031 3105, leave us a message on SpeakPipe, or send us a text message starting with Dum to 0778 620690. And thank you to our social media supremos, Cosmo for his podcast roundups, Mike Hatton for his character counts, Shambridge for her voices, and to Lucy B. Freeman.
on this week's episode, hear views from Drew, Matthew, Jane, Paul, Cheryl, and Drew Horn, Witherspoon, and Glynn. But first, it's Amber's week that was in Ambridge.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. I'm Amber, and on This Week in Ambridge, Helen is utterly baffled by the idea of doing something good for the environment without being paid for it, as Kirsty litter picking in her free time leaves Helen utterly dismayed. Rex takes a leap into V for Vendetta-style class warfare, propelling himself through sheer bitterness alone, and is transformed from pleasant, hard-working young man into festering internet troll before our very ears. Kirsty's clearly had some lessons on how to look suspicious as fuck as she tries to unburden her guilt by tracking down Philip's lads at the local homeless hangouts. I'm sure the police will look at this without the slightest sideways glance. Philip Moss rushed to hospital after scorching burn from Professor Jim Lloyd, who ousts him like the tarted up pond scum he is. And that was the week in Ambridge.
Thank you for that, Amber. As always, a very concise rundown of the goings-on in Borsetshire. But now, it's our hot topic of the week. And this week's hot topic of the week is Brian Aldridge, Squire of the Village, every man of the moment, the two sides of him. Brian Aldridge, do we love him? Do we hate him? Is he a big pile of poo or is he just about right? Pete Ficklin, generally you suggest the hot topics of the week, but I believe I'm just pitching the ball to you for you to pass it on to our Kerry. So why don't you set the scene on Brian Aldridge this week, sir?
Well, it's more about Kerry's deep and profound affection for him. I mean, as sure as the sun comes up and the moon takes its place at nighttime, Kerry, you know, chimes in with her deep, unabiding affection. And I'm just, you know, I feel it must have been rocked this week because he was an absolute shitbag.
Well, here's the thing, though. I don't know if that metaphor really stands up, Peter, because the moon doesn't always replace the sun at nighttime. Sometimes it's a full moon or a new moon and there isn't a moon.
Such a pedant.
Oh, that's me. That's me. Anyway, sorry, Kerry, you're going to defend Brian Aldridge.
Well, I do adore Brian as a character. As I've mentioned before, I wouldn't want him as a boyfriend, husband, lover, whatever. But I know that we're all referring to him bursting into the shop and saying to Kirsty, what was it? He said, "Oh, hello, half of the gruesome twosome." And then he laid into her completely about being a hypocrite because she'd drawn his family through the mud and loved every minute of it. So he was doing the same to her in the village shop. For one thing, I didn't think he would have actually done that. And I know he'd been irked by Harrison copping him for a speeding ticket just before that. But I just don't think Brian would have marched in without his mask on. That was quite not funny, but the fact that Jim shouted mask and it had to be Brian who hadn't put his mask on, didn't it? Striding into the shop for goodness knows what. Well, Jennifer's supermarket delivery had only half been delivered, hadn't it? So it was an emergency, I'm sure, at home.
It was a bit of a domino rally of kind of annoyance, wasn't it? You had Harrison all sensitive and beaten up because he was perceived as being a light touch and having, you know, let the village down with the not, you know, fingering the mosses. He then takes that out on Brian when he might have, you know, on another day being a bit more gentle. Brian then storms into the shop, now is unable to bite his tongue and forgive, you know, Kirsty, despite, you know, I thought they reconciled quite sort of affectionately a few months ago. Then, of course, that sort of sets Jim up for his righteous fury later on in the week. It was all sort of, it was all happening, wasn't it? The whole week was set up in that one scene.
Yeah, I know Brian has got his dreadful side, but would he have really said putting up a postcard for more cheap labour within a couple of minutes of catching sight of Kirsty?
He's normally sort of smoother. He's not. He's not so crass. They did have that reconciliation, and I thought that was a. And at least, you know, like, I mean, I've had a few problems with my neighbours recently. I mean, with noise. You know, you pick your time to go around and say something, don't you? And it's the same thing with, they live next door to each other. You wouldn't just have a slanging match in the village shop.
Yeah.
You'd think, you know, it would force you to bite your tongue a bit.
Yeah, and I don't think Harrison having given him a speeding ticket would be enough to tip Brian over the edge into that realm. You know, I think Harrison's right to give him a speeding ticket, by the way. It wasn't really the fact that he did that. It was just how he did it. It was a bit strange, wasn't it? Super officious and weird. Also, in Brian's defence a little bit, I thought he was great with Neil later on when Neil was super, super worried about the auditor being in and, you know, panicking about maybe losing his job and Barrow falling apart and stuff. And Brian really reassured him and said, like, none of it is your fault, Neil. No way will I let anything happen to Barrow. He kind of redeemed himself a bit. And there were people on Twitter who quite enjoyed him laying into Kirsty.
Yeah.
I'm clutching at straws with that last bit.
Kirsty was kind of on his side a little bit, wasn't she? She was sort of saying, yeah, I've had it coming. You know, sort of mollified Helen when Helen was, you know, ready to go on the rampage.
Yeah, that's true. She did actually say, I think Brian's right.
Obviously, Kirsty is massively sort of, you know, wallowing in guilt and sort of self-flagellating to an extraordinary degree at the moment. But they picked Brian. Brian was going to be the one to represent the, you know, the negative side of the village. And it was just, it all seemed a little bit too clumsy. Yeah. And also, it was all, like I said, it was very neatly done to sort of set Jim up as this kind of, it helped sort of set Jim as the kind of moral center of this argument at the beginning of the week so that we could have the big payoff at the end, which I think, you know, everyone loved.
Yeah. And also that little backstory thing about Harrison feeling underrated amongst his colleagues in the police force and in the village. He's definitely on a bit of a downer about himself, isn't he?
Are they going to do a tour of every single person in the village and how they feel and how they feel they could have done better and how they didn't spot it? Or are they eventually going to have someone who's a bit more like me? It's just like, well, you know, I'm not giving myself a hard time. I mean, it could have been anyone. You know, how are we to know? I mean, because a lot of people have made the point, like, you know, for instance, David, you know, a friend who's a builder comes to you with a price. You're not GlaxoSmithKline. You're not, there's not some kind of, you know, auditing committee within your organization, you know, asking you to do, you know, find five different bids. Friends come along, you like them, they've offered, you know, given you a reasonable quote. And so you say, yes, please, thank you very much. It's interesting and it's enjoyable to listen to, but it is starting to get a little bit too much hearing every single person's kind of hand wringing.
I think Gavin's going to shake things up when he appears.
Well, I quite liked hearing from Philip. I'd missed him.
It was weird hearing his voice for the first time, wasn't it?
Yeah, and there he was, you know, trying to be all charming to Alistair. And, you know, Alistair, I mean, it was Alistair, I thought, it was very well acted. This is the point that I felt a lot of people were missing throughout the whole slavery plotline. The most important currency that these people have and manipulate is good manners and people's unwillingness to rock the boat or ask awkward questions. That's the space in which they operate. So even at the point at which Alistair's pretty much sure this guy's a slaver, he still ends up being guilted by his, you know, his own decency into getting this man into his house to have a cup of tea.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes Jim coming in, you know, with the righteous fury of 70 bitter years of living with, you know, all these dark secrets to be able to actually just sort of explode all over the place.
I mean, Alistair did begin to question, didn't he? He began to challenge him by saying, you know, the gambling story, I was completely taken in by that. To the point where Philip was leaving and all in a huff, wasn't he, saying, well, is that all you're going to give me then? Is that it?
Yeah. I mean, I would have been fully Alistair. I would have been all kind of like, oh, well, I better hear his side of the story. And, you know, innocent until proven guilty. But I have a feeling you would have warbist him straight down the street. He would have been given both barrels, I think, you know,
he would not
instantly
have come into my house, that's for sure. No.
There would have been no cup of tea.
No.
Yeah. Certainly not with milk in anyway.
when Jim was saying, you know, you haven't offered our guest a cup of tea or a drink or something, that was funny when Alistair was very baffled by that, wasn't it? And all of us were like, oh, Jim's up to something. What's it going to be?
You could just feel dishes were put down, TVs were turned off. You know, everyone sat, which is like, okay, here we go. This is months and months and months of waiting coming to fruition. This is going to be absolutely glorious. It didn't let down. It was wonderful.
It was.
I really enjoyed that.
It was. And I wasn't actually expecting that to be the thing that happened. Jim was setting up a trap for Philip, and that he knew that Philip was in his house, you know, when he walked in and kind of went, oh, it's you. I thought he knew he was in there already. He'd rung the police and they'd be waiting outside. But this was better.
Mm. Exactly. What was the killer line? I hope the rest of your life is a living hell or something.
Yeah, may you be trapped in a living hell.
That's the one. Cynical me then made a very, you know, bleak reference to Brexit Britain, but anyway.
I think my favourite bit was when he said, you are weak and pathetic yourself.
I think a couple of times I kind of was like, oh, is he talking to me? Is it, you know, this is a, maybe Philip and I got more in common than I thought. It was like, oh, it's very harsh.
When Philip said fake news as well.
Only idiots say that. One of the things they had to do, obviously, was, you know, they had Philip giving the sales pitch for, you know, how he wasn't a slaver. He was actually a man who'd found a nuanced and slightly tweaked version of normal trading practices to try to make a situation work for everyone. They have to put in these things that, you know, remind you every now and again, he's a complete bell end. And, you know, I bet you there were still people who were kind of like listening to it going, well, that doesn't sound so bad, actually, you know. I mean, so I guess what I'm trying to say is, having someone say the phrase fake news out loud is a big old meaty useful signpost that, like, this person is worthless and do not listen to the word they say.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're saying fake news, as my wonderful, wonderful mother-in-law, she is one of the remaining 12 or 14 people in the country who say not at the end of a sentence.
Is she?
At some point I have to pluck up the courage and sort of look to sort of confront her about this and say maybe we should stop. But I think fake news might be the new not.
Should we move on? Just because, interestingly, the pair of you have pushed the needle somewhat in terms of guessing what our caller winner is going to speak about this week. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have a little bit of this.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
And let's start in the east. Let's start in Tokyo, and it's Drew.
Oh, hi there to Royfield and whoever else is manning the desk at Dumpty Dum Towers this week. This is Drew calling with a missive from the Dumpty Dum Tokyo branch office. I am sitting in my car. I've just listened to the last episode of the week. For me, that's the Friday morning episode. And I am gobsmacked. I am in awe. I hadn't made the connection between Jim's past trauma and this current storyline. Whichever writer that was that made that connection, bravo. And of course, the acting was fantastic. It was really raw and emotional. I wanted to stand up and shout. I wanted to applaud Jim. I was driving, so I didn't. But fantastic. The important missing piece of this puzzle is still Gavin, right? Because Jim's explanation isn't true at all. There is no question in my mind that, you know, he didn't find those three guys. He bought those three guys. Otherwise, how would he know, you know, how would he have the relationship with the slave trading network? Or he tried to sell Blake back in, oh, I don't know, June or so. He sold all three of them in December. And these were two separate slave dealers that he was talking to. So he didn't just sort of stumble into this thing by accident. He's been doing this for a while, and those three probably aren't the only victims. Anyway, those are just the two points that I had. Have a good week, everybody. I really hope that Phil ends up getting his comeuppance and that it happens soon. All right, see you all later. Bye.
Well, if you had clapped whilst you were driving, Drew, I think Harrison would have stuck you with a ticket or something, wouldn't he? He'd have enjoyed that. Yeah. Exactly the same. I hadn't connected Jim's past story to this one, so therefore was not expecting Jim to do what he did and link it all back to himself having been taken advantage of. So it was sort of stunning, that moment.
When Jim first arrived, he was sort of that kind of very binary, sort of very black and white moral sort of clarity that Jim had was obviously kind of like, it was kind of framed as him being this rather awkward, judgmental character. And then, you know, here we are, you know, down the line, and a lot of other people have been caught, as I said, in the kind of, you know, in the ambiguity of the desire to be nice, or, you know, always to try and see things through the lens of kind of, you know, optimism or seeing the best in people. And, you know, Jim is obviously more analytical because he's had to be, because he's been abused and he hasn't got the space or room in his heart to be so trusting. Yeah. And as I said, I would have been an Alistair, I would have been a Shuler, I would have definitely have given Philip an easy time. One of the things that I have found difficult about the plot, not beyond the upset of the plot. One of the things I found difficult is he's obviously deeply into this. There's a network. How do you get into the network? Like, I mean, it just boggles the mind. I mean, obviously, you know, I've led a comparatively privileged, very soft life, because no one's going to walk up to you in the suit, you know, in Wix or in the builder's yard and say, oh, by the way, if you talk to Tony, he's got a bunch of slaves you can buy. I mean, it's such a big leap.
Philip did say, which is probably a lie because his mouth was moving, he approached homeless folk because he needed cheap labour and then provided the home for them. That was his story, but...
But still, even if you follow that story through, so he's got his three homeless lads and he's set them up in this house and he's being a good man. He's giving them food, and unfortunately, he doesn't have any money left over after the house and the giving them of food, you know, and the PlayStation to have any money left to pay them with. You know, but you know, isn't that enough? And everyone knows about the deal. How do you then get into this network? It's just, I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
I guess the whole point of the plot line is that people like me, people like Royfield, as he said several times, you know, to his credit, we don't know how to access these networks, but it is very depressing.
I think Drew is right in saying that these three slaves that we're all aware of are likely to not be the only ones.
You know, not have been sort of just wandering past the yard as...
Yeah, yeah.
As Philip said, he has intentionally gone out using, you know, probably guided by someone more experienced.
Mm. I don't know. Obviously, I don't know how you access a network of which you can buy and sell human beings. But that's the one bit of Philip's story which, to me, did ring true, was how he stumbled into this pit of moral evilness. And that it was somebody who worked for him and then he couldn't afford them and then they were homeless. That bit, for me, did ring true, but I don't know. I don't know. As you said, Kerry, Philip's mouth was moving, so it was probably just all lies. Right. But in terms of how you are in business, you know, the margins are thin, and then there is somebody who used to work for you, and then you see them homeless, and you say, well, you know, and that bit did make some level of sense, but his mouth was moving, so who knows? Yeah. Who knows? We've got lots of calls, so let's move on from Drew. Right, so Drew is on the old tractor, and the great news is for our Drew is there's not one, not two, but three people in Tokyo who are on tractor. So I suggest you all say, what's Japanese for hello? Is sayonara hello and goodbye? Or is it just goodbye?
What's konnichiwa? Is konnichiwa hello?
I'm very, very embarrassed. I actually studied Japanese for a while and I can't remember.
Sayonara sounds like a goodbye to me.
Anyway, whatever the Japanese is for hello, I feel this is kind of like language 101. Why don't you all go onto Tractor and message each other, look at the map, zoom in, you can see the three of you, and just say hello, but suitably in Japanese. Moving on from Tokyo, now we're going to northern Portugal. It's Matthew.
Hello, all Dumpty Dummers. It's Matthew here in northern Portugal. So the dust has yet to settle in Ambridge following the unmasking of Philip, and the blame game has already begun. One weaponizing it was Evicti Rex, one of the Fairbrother brothers. With Rexit in full swing, he did what any angry young man would do and moaned about it on social media. However, given the lack of attention his incendiary words gathered, I can only assume he posted it to Parler shortly before Amazon, Google and Apple put it in the bin. Speaking of accommodation, Greenacres was the place to be this past week. You can bring a love interest back by night, enjoy a custom-made breakfast in the morning, and then sit back and watch your academic host verbally eviscerate a monster. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I perhaps unfairly referred to PC Harrison Burns as the Lestrade to Roy Sherlock Holmes. Maybe between my criticism and the level of Philip deceit, PC Burns seems to have reinvented himself as a no-nonsense bad cop. Finally, we have Dirty Harrison. Once he's done with Philip, he can move on to other pressing local cases. He could start by smashing the McCreary moonshine racket before turning to Ambridge's arch-villain, Eddie Gobblegate Grundy. When he finally corners the tryptophan tyrant on the infamously unstable roof of Lower Loxley and charges him with the crimes of defeathering counterfeit turkeys, it will be with the words, "Do you feel plucky, punk? Ciao, gente, obrigado."
Oh, God, that was a masterpiece, wasn't it?
That was some very, very high praises incoming. That was James Richardson-esque. Anyone who doesn't know Jimbo, that is masterful.
He is wonderful, wonderful Matthew Weir in Porto. I did try to tell myself to not laugh quite as much as I usually do, but I couldn't stop myself there, so I'm sorry about that. Yeah, Rex is in full swing, isn't he, moaning on the old social media. We were talking, Peter, weren't we, before this, about where he'd posted that, because at first it was described as being a text, because obviously he was just battering away on his phone. But it's got to have been on social media. And then by the time Josh was taking the beers round, there'd been no mention of it to Rex by anyone. So Matthew's point does stand. He probably did post it somewhere like Parler, where nobody can actually read.
Rex's journey from easygoing doormat to raging capital protester, ready to take down, you know, all the authorities. It's pretty full on. The first pip, now it's the whole family. I was actually thinking of you, Kerry, when he was doing that rant. I was thinking Kerry's probably nodding along to this quite enthusiastically as he was kind of outlining all of the hypocrisies and all of the smugness of the Archer family.
Yeah. When he said, people think that David and Ruth are really nice and I'm here to tell you that they're not, kind of thing. I did think he sounds exactly like me. When I was listening. And I probably would post it on social media. So I think the script writers are having a bit of a dig.
He was kind of had his arm twisted by Josh. Josh was saying, oh, you do know that they're nice people, don't you, Rex? You know, you do know that they're, you know, they're nice people and would only do the right thing. And I was thinking, well, and then, you know, obviously Rex kind of buckled and said, yes, yes, I do. But I was thinking, yeah, I think Josh might be the best of them, to be honest. You know, he's sort of maybe just a bit more honest about his ambition and his desire to get ahead. So when he wanted them kicked out for his own personal gain, he didn't hide behind it. He said it to Pip. He said it to Rex. Said it to anyone who would listen. And, you know, he had a clear business idea. All right, why? But when Rex was saying about, you know, the fact that Pip, you know, pretending to be upset about it, you know, which is not really, well, she was actually, she was two-faced about it. And so was Ruth. But anyway, we're getting on some very, very well-worn ground.
Yeah, he did a really decent thing there, I think. People don't apologise properly enough. He went round, he was sticking up for his family, even though, you know, he was wrong. They are not nice. He was really trying to build bridges there, wasn't he? And why Rex would feel aggrieved at having to leave Hollow Tree. Rexit.
And it also, I'm glad to hear Gobblegate's back again as well. there's a very vulgar, potty-mouthed tweeter who often makes some rather crass jokes about the Archers, who made references to Gobblegate when Tracy was trying to get home from Jazzers. But anyway, 13-Minute Man is who I'm referring to.
I liked the dirty Harrison. Do you feel plucky?
Yeah, Matthew is now filed alongside Pat and a few other people with, you know, caller inners who just make me feel ashamed to even be speaking to the microphone.
Same.
Smashing. Well, a praise indeed, Mr. Weir over there in Porto.
Hello, dum-de-dum. First time calling in here. My name is Jean. I'm a painter, as in an artist painter, and I'm in Glasgow. I got into the Archers during Brian and Siobhan's affair, which makes me really vintage. I found Dum-de-Dum during the first lockdown and immediately felt, well, sort of indiscriminately in love with all of you. So I had to call in this week because the Jim and Philip episode was Shakespearean in its brilliance. Witherspoon mentioned in the Facebook page that it was a fantastic weaving together of the two storylines. And yes, the study of selfishness, self-centeredness and sociopathy has been stunning in the understanding and exploration of the complexities of a character like Philip. Complexities which only really exist in the lives of other people around him who, naturally enough, reach for normal human explanations for his behaviour when really it is very difficult to understand the sociopathic character because, in a way, it is an empty hole. Just look at Donald Trump. Look at Donald Trump for the best example. So what else did I want to say? Oh, yes, I love the storyline and Jim's reaction are aligning with the current political chaos. It feels very timely and satisfying indeed. So lots of respect to the writers. And poor Kirsty, I think she comes in for a lot of criticism when really her behaviour at the moment regarding the volunteering, etc., is to be expected. The trauma she's experienced has caused her to ricochet like a pinball machine. I feel enormous sympathy for her. Anyway, lots of love to all at Dum-de-Dum from Glasgow. Oh, and my builders rejected my scones. They seem to like toffee pops instead. So cheerio. Thanks, Dum-de-Dum, for everything you do. Lots of love. Bye.
Oh, Jane, why did the builders reject any scones?
There's been a lot of archers chat about exactly what's the appropriate food to give to. Oh, that was last week, wasn't it? It was Philippa with her chunky Kit Kats,
yes. Royfield.
Mm-hmm. I feel I am some level of an authority on builders at the moment. And yeah, it's energy drinks. That's what they get through now, as far as I can tell. In London, anyway. It got to the point where it was just a little dance we did every morning. Just, you know, hello, would you like a cup of tea? No. An occasional real cup of coffee. But then it had to be like a real cup of coffee.
No snacks?
No. You know, I offered all kinds of stuff. I mean, once or twice when I was making lunch for the family, they would have some of that. But, you know, anyway.
Isn't it nice to know that someone is in love with us all?
Absolutely. I mean, and Blanket as well, no exceptions. Yes. So that's, you know, that's good. That would have been fantastic. It's like, and I got into it during the lockdown, and I love you all except for Peter, who's a stuck-up, sexist, racist gobshite and can just F off. For anyone who feels like that, I would have wholeheartedly agreed with it. My self-confidence is at an all-time low at the moment, so I would have fully gone for that.
Oh, why is that, Peter?
I've been chin up all through the lockdown, and I think it's, you know, it's finally got to me. I'm a latecomer to the... I mean, I've been all kind of like trying to see the positives, and I think it's finally got me.
But Jane's voice was lovely, and I would have loved her to have annihilated you in her beautiful Scottish voice.
And I'm planning to become Scottish when Rosie Porty has said I can become Scottish. So that's pretty much decision made. I think Nicola Sturgeon will be receiving a sealed envelope from Rosie in the next few weeks.
Really?
I will be Peter McFickling. Yeah,
she was right as well, Jane, about the sociopaths being difficult to understand, but and yet being a gaping hole. I like.
That's the perverse thing about sort of psychopathy and sociopathy, if that's the correct way of putting it, is obviously they are masterful at reading us and imitating us. And yet, you know, from our point of view, just their behaviour is so alien and so impossible to decode. I mean, that's, again, it's probably their success, isn't it? Because how could you suspect what these people are up to? Because they are, you know, because they're so happily, or not happily even, so comfortably evil.
Yeah. Ooh, scary.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, our Jane McCants is somewhat of an accomplished and a celebrated artist over there in Glasgow. So if you go to Jane McCants, MCCANCE.com, you can see her artwork, see her paintings. She's a wonderful person. So that's Jane over there in Glasgow. Now it's Paul.
Hi all, I'm Paul from the New Forest side of the wonderful city of Southampton, but I'm also fortunate to spend many months of the year in Fuerteventura. I'm a first-time caller-innerer. I think I've been a constant dum-de-dum listener for over 4 years. I remember I recorded a group of about 80 of us singing Barwick Green at my friend and likewise regular listener, Cincinnati Steve, for his 60th birthday party. Unfortunately, it never made it onto the show. I consider my Archer's vintage to make me a long-lost member of the Gabriel family. Walter Gabriel was one of the first voices I remember, and I always loved Nelson's lugubrious tones. Oh, to have a voice like Jack May.
Yes.
I was prompted to call this week for two reasons. First, it was just a brilliant week. I believe one of the main reasons soaps are so addictive is because we usually know more about what's happening than the characters do. So the handling of the ongoing fallout on the modern slavery story was really fascinating. Yet again, John Rowe as Jim Lloyd was brilliant, and it was great to hear him. The whole omnibus was excellent and made me think again about how much I miss the 6 episodes a week format. Secondly, something that's been in my head for over a year now. It's part of the they don't know what they don't know premise I referred to earlier. Wasn't Ed originally introduced to Tim Oatie by Oliver? Or have I misremembered? That introduction nearly cost Ed everything, and I don't think Oliver has ever found out that he inadvertently started a chain of events that cost Ed and Emma a precious year of their relationship and their dream home. I wonder what he'd do if he knew. Anyway, that's it from me. Stay safe, take care, count your blessings. The Archers and Dum-de-Dum are two of mine. Mug of tea raised to you all. Thank you. Cheers.
Aww. Mug of blessings back. Yeah, that was an interesting thing that Paul has said at the end there about the Tim Oatie introduction by Oliver.
Yeah, I think a lot of us were assuming Tim Oatie was somehow sort of caught up in the Philip plot line, weren't we? I mean, this was not too late, but that, you know, I mean, Borset just doesn't seem big enough to have 5 or 6, you know, like a Richardson's Anna craze. you know, you sort of suspect that all of the ne'er-do-wells are kind of linked up somehow.
Yeah.
But then it gets back to what we were talking about earlier on with, you know, the different, you know, you've got the Neils of this world who are kind of absolutely devastated by mm-hmm. any potential connection they've got to Philip. And then you've got probably a bit more like me who would sort of maybe feel a bit guilty, but also see the fact that, you know, introducing someone to, you know, someone to a Timoti is not the same thing as condoning Timoti's behaviour.
Yeah, true. Of course, Paul is totally correct in that part of our fascination currently is that we know so much more than the characters do themselves. And so us hearing them discovering the stuff that we know already and trying to work it out in their consciences.
I feel like they're making a lot more effort to play with us as listeners than they have done in the past. How long's the most recent editor been around? I want to say a year and a half. Is that right, Royfield?
Maybe about two.
So after getting their feet under the table and then sort of planning the scripts out, and obviously they can't just throw the baby out with the bathwater, I think we're starting to sort of feel the full editorial tone of the new regime. Mm. And I think they're a lot happier to sort of lie to us for the sake of plot development, which I quite like.
Yeah, so do I.
But it used to be a lot more what you see is what you get, right?
Mm.
True that. True that. Paul, hopefully you've heard the start of the show. If you got this far, Paul, you probably have heard the start of the show. And you would have heard Cincinnati Steve, your best muckers, 60th birthday. So there you go. 3 years late, but we got there in the end.
Hi, Royfield, and whatever reprobates you've dragged in from the street. It's Cheryl here, calling from the bench of the Brazen Robin, halfway around my daily exercise here in the Wall of Corn. First time I phoned in a couple of weeks, just because I thought the 70th anniversary episode was a real breaking point, an end of Act 1 in which we found out what a rotter Philip is, and the beginning of Act 2 where the village take the fallout, hopefully heading towards Act 3 where the police and the legal system do their bit and actually punish him. A couple of things from this week. I was really taken with the conversation between Brian and Neil and what that meant in terms of Neil is the honest man who feels guilty even though he's done absolutely nothing wrong. And Brian, as the real sort of voice of reason and calm and reassurance, in a way that I just don't think that Neil would have got from Justin. Moving on to Jim and his fabulous conversations, both in respect to Trazza with that lovely crossword thing about, you know, three being a crowd. And then moving on to Philip, where he lulled him into that false sense of security and allowed him to tell his tale and delude himself into believing he was reasonable, and then wrapping it all up nicely, handing it back to him on plate and saying, you know, take a look at yourself and look how horrible you are. Wonderfully acted. Mm. We knew exactly what Jim was thinking and where his mind was going, and you could feel everything he was pulling together. It's the beauty of knowing this character so well now, of how this has come together and how right I think that felt. But what on earth was Alistair doing letting him into the house? It was just bonkers. I mean, anyone else would have said, not being seen with you, on your way, boy. Obviously, the genius of Jim and what he did was that both him and Alistair have now heard exactly the full story that they can take to the police and be credible witnesses when the whole thing goes to court.
That's true, isn't it? I didn't even think of that. Jim and Alistair can take that to the police.
And reprobates dragged off the street, Royfield. Interesting parallels between your management technique and Philip's there.
Well
yeah.
done.
Yeah. Are you going to give us three square meals soon?
Well, no, but you got a Nintendo, was 64 to play with. How's that?
Great. She was right, Cheryl, about Brian being that calm, reassuring person towards Neil.
Yeah, she put it better than I did. That's what I was trying to say, basically.
Yeah, and also the key bit, you know, about lovely, lovely Jim again, not just with the Philip stuff, but that whole thing. He knew Tracy was upstairs, didn't he?
Now, just a quick note, everybody. We have raised £5,904 British pounds for Unseen. And actually, there's been a rather large donation which has been made to Unseen through Charity Aid. The great listener, well, listeners, because it's a husband and wife team that did that, who said, Royfield, don't mention our names and don't mention the amount. But all I can say is utterly thank you. Thank you to everybody who's donated so far. As I said, it's £5,904 to date. And definitely thank you to the husband and wife team. They know who they are. And I sent them a message and said, bloody hell. And they went, you know, it's all right. We're just doing what we think is right. And definitely thank you to you. Now, what we are going to do is on the 29th, that's Friday the 29th of this month, we are going to do a Dum-de-Dum Live, Ben Sexy Eyes Norris, who of course plays Ben Archer. And then we will unveil the recipient, the lucky recipient of the 70th anniversary script. And just to reiterate what Ian Pepperell said at the start of last week's episode, this has been signed by all the actors of the Archers. So if you haven't donated to Unseen yet, quite simply, go on to justgiving.com/fundraising, and it's Blake, Kenzie's and Jordan. You can go on to dumdedum.com and the link is there, or go to us on Facebook or on the Twitters and you'll see the link there. Any donation, it's not an auction, will give you not only help us get to our new goal of 10,000 quid to give six months worth of shelter and support for somebody who's been a victim of modern slavery, but also go into the hat to potentially receive a signed 70th anniversary Archers script. Thank you to everybody that's made us get up to this figure so far. So technically, it's actually somewhat bigger than what it says on Just Giving, because a large donation was made just once seen through Charity Aid.
Do you mean that anyone who has donated thus far might become the recipient, or do you mean that anyone who donates during that live?
Oh, no. I'm sorry if that wasn't clear. So thank you for clearing that up. We're going to pull the names out of the hat live during the Ben Norris show. So lots of people have donated anonymously. Very obviously, if you're anonymous, I don't know who you are, but if you have left your name basically on the Just Giving page, your name will be put into the hat and you never know, you might be pulled out of said hat. So that was our Cheryl. Now it's Andrew Horn, and he's got some stuff to say, and I believe he's going to give somebody the clap.
Greetings, Earthlings. Andrew Horn here. Now, one burning hot topic that we must address. Hobnobs. Those are the biscuits that we give to the workmen, builders, and people who come to the house. No one is getting their hands on my rich tea and fig rolls. They are exclusively for me. I don't know why you've got such a downer on rich tea biscuits, Royfield, but you're wrong. End all. And of course, the other really important matter to the script writers and the actors this week in what will become a vintage episode. I ask you all to rise and join me. That is all. Stay safe, everyone.
I want to know whether the hobnobs are chocolate or not. He didn't specify. It was very important.
Andrew's got big hands as well.
Yeah.
That's a meaty clap. Always mistress has an ample bottom. Yeah. Just bend over there. got to applaud Jim Lloyd. Yeah, sorry, Andrew. You're a God-fearing and clean living man. I apologise.
Jim definitely does deserve a clap.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, Royfield has said a couple of times about how it took him a while to sort of fall in love with Linda, and I feel that, you know, Jim has gone on a comparable, if not identical, sort of, you know, arc. He's, you know, he started off as the kind of rather prickly, hectoring father, and he's now, you know, he's right at the center of things, isn't he? He can do no wrong for quite a long time.
True. Mm. That is very true.
You know,
I think the saddest thing with Jim was his lack of interest, affection, no parties and so on for the parent, and sort of thinking, oh my goodness, and it made sense as to how Alistair was, how he was, and that was the tragedy for me, that for years and years and years what had happened to Jim had made him disconnect from his own child.
Hey baby, I hear the blues are calling, toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings everyone in Dumpty Dum Towers, and to all Dumpty Dummers around the world, it's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. Today, I'm not going to discuss that great finale episode of the week, as I'm sure many others will. I do have two topics, and I hope you review both. First, going back to Shula not wanting to speak with Philip when he called, I'm actually going to support what she did. Whenever I see the name of a difficult or challenging patient calling, I always let it go to voicemail. It gives me a chance to listen to the message, hear what the issue is, and gather my thoughts to avoid saying the wrong thing. Obviously, if it's an emergency, I return the call immediately. Otherwise, I call back when I'm in a comfortable position and mentally prepared to talk. So, to the wannabe vicar, there was no need to get all Prince of Denmark about it. In the future, when parishioners call you with their problems, it is perfectly Christian to let it go to voicemail first, but do call them back. Second topic, Trazer. Following up on what I briefly said 2 weeks ago, I still don't want to see them as a couple. Yes, I do think Tracy is too good for Jazzer. We've seen a lot of maturing in her over the last year, and I think she needs someone who would help her strive to do even better. Even though we see sparks of improvement in Jazzer, I worry he would drag Tracy down. As I've mentioned before, I see Jazzer as the court jester of Ambridge, and I'd like to see him remain as a single man. You know, it reminds me of Sam and Diane in Cheers, who were more interesting and fun when they were flirting rather than when they were together. Also, it seems like in many of the couples in Ambridge, I'm not saying at all, the woman is more emotionally intelligent and sensible than the man, and I don't want to see Trazer as another one of those couples. Talk to you soon.
With a spoon. The Shula thing, yeah, I get why you might leave difficult people who've come up on your phone to go to voicemail. The problem with her is, if she'd done that, that would have been fine. But no, she was going, "Ooh, what do I do? What shall I do? It's Philip." You know, just have some sort of decision-making facilities within your brain to know what to do, instead of behaving like that. That's the thing. And I know she wasn't a vicar yet. That doesn't matter at all. Just you know what to do if Philip the slave master calls you.
Also, her crisis wasn't about doing the right thing by Philip or doing the right thing by, you know, the community. It was all about the effect it was having on her.
Yep.
You know, she was worried for herself. Alan made the point that you have to, was it Alan who made the point? You know, you have to talk to all sorts. Yeah. It's not just being a vicar, is not just a kind of like a giant, you know, echo chamber of, you know, hearing the stuff you want to hear. So you might have to have a chat with some pederasts and gerontophiles and slavers and, you know, depending on the village, obviously. So take Witherspoon's advice. Listen to the message. But you are going to have to speak to this person, even if it's just to tell them, you know, go to the police and tell them the truth.
But also, if she hasn't fathomed yet that there's going to be tricky conversations and tricky people coming up on her phone and stuff,
that's a bit odd,
isn't it? Then the Trazer thing, not wanting them to be a couple because Tracy's too good for Jazzer and that Jazzer might bring her down and he should stay single. I think that's writing Jazzer off a bit. Why can't he be set on this lovely road of actually feeling more fulfilled about his life because he is with someone important to him?
He can't rise to challenges he doesn't have. When Jim needed support, Jazzer was there for him. Mm. I think I've made comments about pig arcs before. He might operate around the margins and cut a few corners, but ultimately when it's raining and Tom needed help on a, you know, Sunday or Saturday morning, he would drag himself out of bed to help. I mean, I think when the chips are down, Jazz is someone you want behind you. He's helped Ed out of a few scrapes over the years.
I just think they've got a good connection. They speak to each other on the same level.
I adore both of them, so nothing I'm going to say is supposed to be taken as a sort of criticism of either of them. But Tracy showed the complications of being a dedicated mother who is trying to also, you know, fulfill all parts of her life, including her love life. And she basically put down the opportunity of a lifetime to go and, you know, live in the Maldives and have this adventure, something she's probably been yearning for because she wanted to be a good mother. Jazz is obviously doing something right because she's willing to give him the time of day even after he sold her child booze. Mm. So, you know, she's not being the fully responsible person because she's keeping this person who will sell drugs to children in her life and especially when he's next door. So, I mean, this is the Archer, so I'm not trying to take it too seriously, but she is being irresponsible in having a relationship with Jazz.
Irresponsible.
Yeah. He sold booze to her child and she's knocking boots with him. That's irresponsible.
What about, when Jim was saying about the one night stand COVID thing as well, you know, I know he was using it, wasn't he, to sort of say, well, I think there's a bit more to it than this because you wouldn't have risked the COVID rules for a one night stand, would you? And he was like, oh, I wasn't really thinking about that.
I'm trying not to be too sanctimonious about that. I think you and I had a chat about this a few weeks ago, Kerry. You have your two children. Your mother's part of your support bubble. So ultimately, if you draw a Venn diagram of the people you love, the vast majority of love in your life is all taken care of and you can go for nice walks on the beach. I'm not saying that you haven't been impacted by the lockdown, but you are fairly blessed when it comes to sort of keeping yourself emotionally connected. And I'm exactly the same. I've got my little boy. I've got my lovely wife. So it's very easy for us to get a bit po-faced about stuff. If you're a single person, you know, losing a year of your life. I mean, if someone exciting and someone exciting who turned you on sort of emotionally and physically came along in your life, I'm sorry, COVID be damned.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind a shag though, but I don't know. But I don't think that should be kept in.
Okay, well, listeners, we're going to be, on, as well as a signed script, you can now win something a bit more exciting. breaking news. Royfield, how are we going to manage this?
Well, Kerry has received fan mail. That's all I'm saying. The people are, you know, queuing up to have dibs. And oh, dude, that's a terrible word to say.
I always assumed you were more blessed, Royfield. If you're dibbing, then that's a real...
Peter. Anyway, listen, we need someone to dig us out of this hole. And it's the good, wholesome Glyn full of love.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Glyn here. On location this week in the woods. Pictures to follow on the Facebook page. On to the archers. Last week was a romp and three men behaving badly. I'll confine myself to the three men. First, well, Philip Moss, he was well taken down by Professor Jim Lloyd, and there's nothing I can add to the professor's excellent demolition. On Rex, well, I feel that's all a bit contrived. It feels like they've worked backwards from his posting to being kicked out of Holitree before Christmas. And I'm not a fan of contrived stories, so I'm going to leave that one there. On Brian, well, what does Brian's outburst in the shop tell us about him? I think it tells me that he sees his wrongdoing in essentially transactional terms. He did something illegal, and he's been punished for it, and that's the end of it. And he doesn't really see it in ethical terms. Someone explained atonement to me as you need to break down that word into at-one-ment. And atonement is a process by which you change your behaviour, you change your way of thinking about things, so you accept what you have done. When you've done something wrong, and you seek to correct yourself so you don't make the same mistake again. I think if you look at Brian, I think we can say he's been punished for his sins, but I don't think in those terms he's atoned for his sins. Looking forward to this week and further developments. Thank you all for the podcast. Keep up the great work. And to everyone in Dumpty Dum Land, stay safe. Bye for now.
I do love how very different all of our caller-inners approach the caller-inner-ring.
Sorry to interrupt, Kerry. That was very, very thought-breaking. I'm definitely going to... I've written down a couple of notes. I'm definitely going to have a good old mither about that later on. Because it sort of held a mirror up to some of the stuff I was saying earlier on about how I felt more Brian about the situation. Mm. Not his behaviour in the shop, to be clear, but more his kind of ability to sort of say dealing with Philip does not taint you completely.
Yeah. You know, Brian seeing his wrongdoing in a transactional sense, obviously. Yeah. I reckon Brian was punished for his sins by the script writers this week, to be honest, in that... it was interesting what Glyn said about Rex and being not a fan of contrived stories.
He's going to get the council farm, isn't he? That's happening.
Yeah, someone was saying about why don't Emma and Ed go for the council farm?
Because the actors they can only afford however many actors per 3 month cycle, and those actors have already been used up on, you know, being put in a caravan and you know, all of the practical stuff. Sorry to be is that not the answer?
Oh, right, okay. But yeah, it would be quite good if it got sort of swooped away from Rex in some ways.
The difference between Emma and Ed is Emma is thwarted by social inequity and by the fact that multiple societies, including ours, do not give enough chances to the poor or to people from kind of less privileged backgrounds. And then, you know, but equally, you know, different people react to those circumstances different. I mean, Ed would not look at that farm and think, I deserve that, I should go for it. He would be stressed out about how is he going to, he'd be worried about how is he going to fill the property with, you know, with the livestock, how is he going to afford the cost of the feed. Rex has that kind of entrepreneurial drive, yeah. So it is credible that he would go for that.
Rex will swagger in, thinking he can do it all whilst complaining about the fact that the buildings aren't quite pretty enough.
Yeah, and he also, you know, spending quite a lot of time recently moaning about the Archers and their privilege, he seems to have conveniently forgotten that he was able to be a professional rugby player whilst picking up a stipend from Daddy. So, you know, and the only reason they don't get that stipend now is because their father's even more of a snob than the people that he's so upset with. You know, if they were wanting to be stockbrokers or hedge fund managers, is that the same thing? I don't really know. Then Daddy would still be giving them money. It's only because they're playing at being farmers, as he sees it, that they're even. The irony is because they're playing at being farmers, they can't just ask Daddy to buy them a farm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, having that buffer behind you just makes you be such a different person, doesn't it?
Yeah, I do remember listening to Jarvis Cocker's Common People. I was on my downers, living sort of hand to mouth in Manchester. And I was listening to Common People when it first came out, and I dropped out of university, and I was kind of, you know, but I knew that I was a National Express bus ride from freshly laundered sheets and buttered scones. As I was listening to it, I was like, ooh, I really fail this test.
And Royfield, do you fail that test or not?
Yeah, we've heard him. He's mummy's boy.
Oh, yeah.
Royfield loves his mummy.
I'm very lucky to have a home back in Brum. So if I ever mess up, find my arse hanging out with trousers, I can always kind of go back home.
Yeah.
So yes, Peter, we're in the same boat.
Lucky club. I saw it.
Is a really privileged place to be in, isn't it, really?
Yeah. When Royfield and I were doing some Christmas hellos at Christmas, funnily enough, he sent me a rather lovely screenshot of his assembled family. There was and top left were mum and dad, it was like a kind of family tree, the way that Royfield had organised them all. So mum and dad were top left, and then Royfield and all the children kind of spilled down the page.
Just to link this back to the Archers in another way, it's not by accident that Blake, Kenzie and Jordan come from difficult homes, don't they? Broken homes, non-existent homes. They don't have a relationship with their families, and that's partly the reason why they could be taken advantage of. And the vast majority of people who are British who find themselves in modern slavery come from that background. It's interesting speaking to Justine from Unseen last week. It's one of the things which she did say to me, that it's disproportionately people who've gone through the care system and ultimately don't have those strong family bonds that find themselves, who are non-immigrant, who find themselves kind of in modern slavery. Yeah. So yes, it's very important. It's utterly very important how, you know, the warm, loving embrace, that ultimate kind of insurance policy that the majority of us have, that if we mess up for any reason in our lives, that we still have people to care for us, and we don't find ourselves being vulnerable.
Mm.
I remember being shocked by a friend who was telling me they'd been in care, and they were telling me about just the kind of the suicide rate and incarceration rate of their alumni. It was terrifying.
Emails. So the first one is from Debbie Bridge, and the subject is workman's biscuits and cheap clothes. So she is saying, biscuits for workmen, always McVitie's ginger nuts. For years, my colleague, who was strict about coffee before 12, midday, and tea after 12, would never accept a chocolate or a biscuit until one day I found his weakness, ginger nuts. And yes, I fully agree with you about Primark and similar outlets. If a t-shirt costs 50p, then take away the costs to the store, the staff, the transportation et al. And finally, the bosses in the country where it was made, and the worker gets zilch. If something's cheap, someone somewhere isn't getting their fair share. It's always fascinated me that people who shop in places like Primark and get everything dirt cheap will then donate to charity. They paid the going rate for the goods they purchased, then maybe the workers wouldn't need the charity. Rant over. And that was split into between biscuits and cheap clothing.
How much of it is our personal obligation? I mean, you know, there's so much to think about now when you're making all these day-to-day decisions. So a trip to the supermarket is a real kind of moral conundrum these days. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have started to try and buy fair trade, if that's not the wrong word, mm-hmm. Sort of English or British made clothing, so that I can sort of know that no one has been, you know, is a slave. Just to be a bit smug, I've been doing this before the whole plot line in The Archers. Mm-hmm. And it's incredibly expensive. It, but, you know, luckily these days I don't have to worry about fashion because I'm a middle-aged man. So, you know, these clothes are going to last me forever, hopefully. But yeah, how do you even start? I mean, you've now got to check every pot for palm oil. Are you even allowed to eat oil anymore? You know, this is all cliched stuff, but it's such a... You need government legislation. You need companies to take care of this stuff for you, so that you don't sort of tie yourself in knots over
it. Exactly. And I think people who are on a low income will go to Primark.
You
know,
yeah.
I certainly did when I was single mumming, you know, with two little kids, and, you know, to get the sort of the boring things like baby grows and socks and pants that they outgrow within sort of a month or two. That's where I went for that sort of thing.
Yeah, sorry, Max. Sorry, Mimi. You're going to have to be dressed in threadbare clothes and, you know, with stains on because my morals are more... My care for an abstract child in Asia is greater than my care for the actual bullying you're going to receive at school.
I should have thought more about why and how they were that cheap, but weirdly, just, you know, they were on the high street and seemed reputable, like, yeah. It didn't cross my mind, which is wrong of me, but also I didn't have much money to spend. The biscuit thing's weird, isn't it? Ginger nuts, no thanks. Rich tea, no. Fig rolls, my dad used to eat them, not a fan. Hobnobs, maybe. What's your favourite biscuit? Quickly.
A ginger nut. I love a ginger nut. So if I'm ever around, thank you very much.
Do you dunk or not?
Ginger nut's not a dunking biscuit, I don't think. It doesn't go well with tea or coffee.
All biscuits are dunking.
Just for scoffing. Are they?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to disagree on that one. I mean,
no, those pink wafer biscuits, they're not dunking biscuits.
They're not even a biscuit, really, are they? They're like some sort of polystyrene or something.
I do remember, obviously, I know the proper name, but squash fly biscuits when I was a kid. Oh, that was my absolute. Garibaldi's.
Yeah.
You don't see them anymore, do you?
Good.
When you're running away from your bedsit in Manchester back to the warm bosom of Birmingham and your mother's embrace, what biscuit will you be expecting? What's on the in the brown cupboard?
Chocolate digestives. Mum has it in the biscuit tin. Going back to what Andrew Horn said some minutes ago about why have I got it in for rich tea? Rich tea biscuits are like communion wafer, aren't
yep.
they? Just like utterly boring.
Joyless.
It's just not. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. The only way to enliven a rich tea is to dunk it. And at least you're getting something else into the experience. But they're just, you know, joyless, pious biscuits.
Yep.
But you've got, you two have got kids. Mine's tiny, so I've yet to, I think I will inflict rich tea biscuits on Cyrus because I feel it's part of his kind of cultural heritage to be grateful for biscuits that bad. And then
I couldn't agree with you more. You need to have a rich tea biscuit then to appreciate every other type of biscuit. You know, but yeah. I tell you what, though.
Is that why you have me on the podcast? Am I the rich tea biscuit to the you and Kerry to make everyone? Yeah.
Thank you. I tell you the one thing which blew my stack when I had wee little kids, Farley's Rusks. Oh, my God, those things are fantastic.
Are they sweet? Yeah.
Oh, God, Peter, they're all manner of wonderful. Before you put milk in them or whatever and like mash them up into like a little kiddie porridge, just have a Farley's Rusk. That is a joyous thing to have, I'm telling you.
Oh, I can't remember the last time I bought any biscuits. We're not a really biscuity household. We don't have that much of a sweet tooth. I tell you what are good, though, that you know those Leibniz biscuits or whatever they're called from Lidl where the chocolate's hanging over the side? Quite a dry...
They look like the kind of biscuits you'd have in a brothel. They're too fancy. I mean, you know...
Do brothels have biscuits, Peter? Do tell us about your experience on this point.
Well, do you know, I've never been to a brothel, but I would, there's
I think you have, Peter. Do you know, the level of detail you're going into with
brothel biscuit.
There's two places I want to go to. One is I want to go to a Turkish bath like Chariots in London, because to see what it's like.
Oh, my mates are always in Chariots. You don't want to go in there, Peter.
I do. I want to go there. There's a place.
You'll get violated.
Royfield can go to the place I really want to go to. This is like my ultimate. There's a place on, I used to live on Nob Hill in San Francisco, and there's a place called Bush Street, and halfway up Bush Street.
You used to live in Nob Hill?
Yeah.
Wow, you're proper posh. You were earning the big bucks, Peter.
No, because I was on the tender knob. So halfway between...
Because it's all made up.
These are real area names.
Halfway between the Tenderloin and Knob Hill, I was on on the Tender Knob, I was on Bush Street, so Taylor and Bush. And down the hill from there is a show that's on permanently called Touch My Junk. And I always wanted to go in there. It's basically like Chariots meets a kind of a stage show. But because I want to see what it's like. You know, I want to go into a brothel. I want to do everything but having the sex. No, I don't want to trade in flesh and make people miserable. But seeing as that, I just want to see what goes on.
Mm.
Is that so bad? I just want to nibble.
Nibble on what, Peter?
Sit in the corner of a brothel and nibble on a Leibniz and just watch.
Well caught.
Watch everything going down. Going on.
Oh, my God. Brilliant.
Do we have another email?
We do. Jenny Newman has sent us an email, and the subject is Keep On Keeping On. She says, "Hi, Royfield, Kerry, Peter, and any other presenters. I just wanted to say thanks to whoever it was who recommended the podcast drama This Thing of Darkness. I have binge listened to it this week and absolutely loved it. So much so that it's now the weekend and I've still not listened to this week's Dumpty Dum yet. I love the Archers, but especially love Dumpty Dum and our community. Keep on keeping on. Thanks, Jen."
This is the thing with podcasts now, right, is that your life is just too full of them. There's too many podcasts. Yeah. There's too much on YouTube. There's no more space to absorb all of these different things.
I don't listen to any podcasts other than this one.
You know, is that a tongue-in-cheek lie, Kerry?
No, I don't.
What?
I don't.
Well, so before you were on Dumpty Dum, the only podcast you listened to was Dumpty Dum?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
And my favourite podcast is Revisionist History with Malcolm Gladwell. And every time I listen to it, I feel like such a charlatan and a fraud. Royfield inflicting my nonsense on the world when I could be doing something as as erudite and as clever as Malcolm Gladwell.
Let me stop you right there, Peter. Right, I enjoy Revisionist History. There's a massive team of people behind that. I went to a conference in Boston year before last. The producer was there, an editor was there, the assistant, blah blah blah, was there. Don't get me wrong. Malcolm Gladwell is a sage of our times. He's very engaging and original thinker. But my God, there's a whole team of people behind that with a lot of money behind them. So to compare what we do with that is like apples and oranges.
We've got Janine, Alfonso, the Gregory twins.
All right, Pete. Yeah, fine. My point's made. And I must admit, I'm a little bit specifically with that podcast, which is a podcast that I enjoy, and is a good Jamaican, British, Canadian guy, Gladwell. But if you're an independent podcaster, it's podcasts like that which are basically taking away ears from independent podcasters, because it's people who are using, and good luck to them, so I'm not blaming them at all, who have made their celebrity in traditional media, then come into podcasting and gone as podcasting being the kind of democratic, egalitarian kind of wild west where, you know, you can just like set up with a podcasting mic and find your audience. Because people like Gladwell are in this space now doing a million downloads a month. There's only so much time that anybody has to listen to stuff. Going back to your point, Peter, and increasingly celebrities are taking up our time and stuff. So there's less time for truly independent podcasts. So this is a little bit of a Royfield rant, and it's nothing against that podcast. It's great. But one of the reasons why it's great is because it is a proper business, and there's about 30 people employed on that podcast alone. It's amazing. Yeah. And I saw the talk that they gave, and I'm like, oh my God.
Well, I know that I give you a hard time, Royfield, and I, you know, mocking you publicly is one of my true pleasures in life these days. Kerry and I have spoken many times in private about the fact that it is, you know, it's a real, I don't want to use a too hackneyed cliche, but I will say anyway, yeah, it's a real honour and a privilege to sort of piggyback the hard work you put in and be able to talk to such a large number of people. You know, it's an unusual thing to be doing as well. It is a treat. So thank you for that.
Well, listen, if it wasn't for the fact that pair of you are so bloody good, you wouldn't be on here, would you? So, thank you for that, me old mate, me old mucker. Now it's time for us to take five, have a quick break. It's Amber Verda once, going to hear her twice. It's a social media roundup.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. Amber again with this week's social media roundup. Well, on the socials, Philip has understandably been talk of the town. Renuka Baldwin said, "Wasn't Philip so cold in his account of how he took on the lads? Does he really believe he did them a favour? Does that count as lying if he truly believes he housed and homed them as a good deed? Or is he just a complete narcissist with a grandiose sense of self-importance?" Nolai Griffin, I hope I pronounced that right, sorry, said, "This is the story he told himself, brackets and Gavin, for years, so he's clinging to it. Fighting to keep believing it because the alternative is pretty awful." Others believed Philip was undeniably aware of what he was doing. Admittedly, after reading this discussion, I'm more inclined to agree. Gail Elizabeth Batty said, "It wasn't just a random one-off, oh, I thought I was helping him out. He knew the black marketeers. He knew the lingo. He had contacts all over the country. Oh, he's a baddie, all right. He's trying to meet up with folks who would spread his tale of woe and mistaken meanings, but obviously Jim hasn't fallen for it. Maybe he'll try Susan next." Alison Brelsford expressed similar sentiments. "He punished them by taking away their games console. He controlled what they ate and probably the clothes they wore, who they spoke to, brackets, Blake in the hospital. He knew that one word out of place and he'd be in trouble. He called them horses. So didn't even look on them as human. It goes beyond arrogance. He knew what he was doing." Lisa Waite agreed. "He was a tiny bit plausible in his self-delusion until you remember how he sold them on to Victoria." Witherspoon weighed into a lot of these discussions incredibly carefully and educationally, as per usual, providing helpful links for information and classifications in the DSM to try and steer people out of the willy-nilly territory of bandying terms like psychopath and sociopath around, as well as educating on the classifications of personality disorders versus mental illnesses. It's always heartening to see informative conversations going on in the group. Thanks for that, Witherspoon. Springboarded from that, something I always love to see, absolutely gassing up of my favourite character, Jim. Lillian McCarthy opened up this praise circle with big ups to the prof. Charlotte Yarker said, "I lost it at, I've been waiting 70 years to say that. Wow, or bravo, as Jim would say." Jonah Titchmarsh said he recognised Philip as an abusive personality like his abuser. He didn't know Philip was abusing anyone, but he knew he was capable of it. Witherspoon said it was a great link between the two storylines, and I agree. A real sign of good writing when they can yoke things together like that so seamlessly, purposefully, and engagingly. On that praise of the writers, Michael Wheelock said, "Jim, I doff my cap at you, sir," brackets, and to the scriptwriters as well. All in all, it seems we were in praise of a well-written, nicely tied up week, with many of you coming on to express how much you enjoyed it as a fuller omnibus at the end of the week. Thanks, bye.
Thank you for that, Amber. Right, Pete, we need some corking tweets.
Do we?
Yes,
I thought it was voluntary these days. Apparently, you can just come on and say,
To be fair to Philippa, because she didn't exactly deliver the best tweets that she could, and you told her that she couldn't. She did say to me beforehand, she says, "Could I possibly do something else? Because I feel battered and bruised." I gave her a special dispensation. However, I'm not giving you the self same dispensation.
No, I very much got that. Okay, here we go. This is my weekly karmic payback for all of the unpleasantness that I give to Royfield. Right, and Kerry as well. Kerry joins in as well for some reason. So here we are. Right, let's start with Bronze, as is traditional. In Bronze place, it's everyone's favourite, a bit Buddhist, at I'm Buddhist. Fair dues to Prof, but only fair to point out his beloved classical civilizations of Greece and Rome failed to make meaningful progress in technology, specifically because slavery was so ubiquitous they never needed to invent any kind of labor-saving devices. Just saying.
Yes, I loved that tweet.
I have had the honour and privilege of talking to Vince, a bit Buddhist's real name, recently, and he is painfully bright. He's a very, very smart man.
Yeah.
So, yes, and so it's an interesting point.
He was at our Brighton meetup, and I've met him, and he's lovely. Royfield, did you absorb the contents of that tweet?
Interesting point, right? And that is the classical take on slavery in antiquity. However, slavery in ancient Greece and Rome was very different from the chattel slavery of the Americas, whereby it was totally unacceptable and normal for a slave in ancient Greece or Rome to be the accountant of the family and to be able to rise up in society. They still had the mark of being a slave. There was a physical mark on them and there's a societal mark, but in terms of their occupation, they could do just about anything. Whereas in chattel slavery, one of the reasons why chattel slavery could exist in the way that it did was because people were of a different skin colour. Slaves in ancient Rome looked like regular Romans. One of the biggest drawbacks in the Brazilian economy in the 19th century was the amount of slaves it actually had. And it was exactly that reason why Brazil economically didn't progress, because there was no reason for a landowner to, let's say, install pipes and have plumbing when you'd have slaves that would go down to the river and then go and fetch a pail of water. However, that wasn't the case in ancient Greece and Rome. So that tweet is only partly true. There were enough centres of education, whether it's Alexandria, where you had academics and people of learning who were actually pushing the knowledge envelope. So it's only partly true. There you go.
But very, very interesting nevertheless.
Yes.
It triggered your response, which was also very interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely partly true. And many people look at ancient Rome and how sophisticated it was. And again, plumbing and water supply is just one of them, where you could take water from miles away into the city of Rome through these massive aqueducts. And they say, why did that society technologically not advance? Because in many ways, it was the equivalent to, let's say, 15th century Europe, but it was 1,000 years beforehand. Mm. And definitely the use of slaves was part of that reason why it didn't. Mm. However, the first steam devices were actually invented in Roman Egypt. I forget the name of the inventor, and this is about 300 AD. One of the reasons why the Roman Republic falls and Julius Caesar becomes the dictator of Rome is because of this break on the economy, because the landowning classes, the Senate, do not give up their land for the poor and the dispossessed. And Caesar realizes that the economy would be much greater if small working class landowners actually had land. So there was this whole thing around Roman society and it being top heavy. But anyway, this is a podcast about the arches.
What you're trying to say there, Royfield, if I can, in a nutshell, is up yours, Vince.
Renowned dunce, a bit British.
It's definitely partly true. It's definitely partly true, but it's not the whole solution.
There will never be a time when a whole solution can be put into a tweet.
He does follow up his initial tweet by pointing out that he was talking more about big civic stuff rather than Roombas, slow cookers and tea maids. So, yeah, he's also a funny man. Yeah,
he is.
So in silver position, and this one's a kind of a two-parter, but it's the silver position tweet is the response by Mr. Richard Beveridge at Biffoprop. So Purple Pumpkin says, the Jim Lloyd fan club is having a recruitment drive this week. Who's in? And Richard says, gym membership is popular in January. Gym membership is for the whole year.
Well
that
done.
That is very good. Yeah. And Richard is marvelous. Well done. And he was a writer in a last week about the copper pickers.
Yeah, he's a very enthusiastic tweeter, doing all kinds of good stuff. Right, okay, so we've had one which got the Royfield history buff approval of sorts. We've got one that made Kerry happy. Now it's bound to go down the toilet. In gold position, the swell of music and Lomelindi 12 at LOMELINDIO12 says, next, Jim goes to the Senate to prosecute another lying, scum-sucking piece of shit.
Right. Okay. You telegraphed our response to that tweet, Pete.
The thing is that maybe when I attacked Philippa and Quentin a couple of weeks ago, because you at least pick them up, you pat them down, you look after them in these moments, whereas you just leave me hanging.
I don't know. I think the run-up to that was quite tricky, and then you sort of sped through it. I don't know. It's the delivery. Sorry. You are not very good at
it. Am I stuck with this?
Yeah. There is a certain level of comic value in the fact that you're
I'm not very good at it.
No. You landed 2 out of 3. It's just that you get your gold, silver and
that's
bronze.
That's my normal hit rate.
In the wrong order.
I know. To be fair, let's be positive. Glass half full. I normally get 2 out of 3. It's just, you know.
That's a glass is 2/3 full then. So
thank you.
You know, your hit rate is 66.6%.
Exactly. So yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Well, okay. There's some feedback for me to use.
DumptyDum.com, folks. Oh, there's loads of things you've done. DumptyDum.com now. And tractor. That's the big thing you can do on DumptyDum.com. And I've got to big up the people on Tractor who've been uploading images to their profiles, because not enough of you bleeders are actually doing that. But some of you have, and it's so nice to see your lovely, wonderful, shiny faces. Quite simply, and we've got this big ass map. When you go to DumptyDum.com and you hit the Tractor link, you will see there are pins all over the globe. There's quite a lot in Australia. There's a few in Japan. Even the United Arab Emirates, put my teeth in, has a couple. And we celebrate that fact. Quite simply, to join the map, hit register. It's over there on the top right. Create your profile. Now, it's not just because you're going to be pinned to the map. but also means that you can talk to Dumpty Dummers, fans of the Archers who are close by. Big up to everybody in Edinburgh and also in California. There are a lot of Dumpty Dummers in California. It's just a wonderful thing to behold. So if you're sat there at home thinking, how do I get part of this wonderful club, this wonderful community? Quite simply, go on to dumptydum.com, register, create your profile, but you know what? Upload a pic. Now, to all you people who've been signing up in your droves, we had so many people. I had somebody sign up from North Carolina today, somebody from Central California just yesterday. Go back onto your profile, hit edit and upload an image because it brings your profile to life. And also, if you're in continental Europe, there's a little cluster of you over there in Holland. Actually, it's all wonderful to see. Talk to each other. But more to the point, if you're in continental Europe and you haven't signed up, go sign up, please. And we want to give props. We want to support our European brethren because we miss you. Since January the 1st, we've missed you, but we're not a million miles away. Brexit has not happened on Dumpty Dum non-tractor. You can still buy merch on dumptydum.com. Patreon, help support the show by going on to patreon.com, giving us $2 per episode. You're going to have lots more content this month. There's going to be a Zoom on the 29th. Of January with Ben Norris, and also I'm speaking to Charlotte Higgins end of this week, who is the head of the art section of The Guardian, who wrote that wonderful long form article about the Archers just last month, of which we were mentioned, but lots of other bits of Archers fandom was as well. So we're going to talk about the cultural impact of the Archers. So we're trying to give you loads of content. Show us your support by going on to patreon.com, giving us $2 per show.
I'm in Europe and I haven't signed up to Tractor yet. So Quentin keeps messaging me, reminding me, and I will do it very soon. So remember to get in contact. You can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website or call 0203 031 3105 to leave a message, or send a text message starting with DUM to 077 86 200 690.
There's Paul Stedman, Martin O'Brien. Who else is in Brighton?
Mm.
In Lewis, you've got County Squire, you've got Andy Hollier, there's somebody in Hove who's there's loads of people.
Ooh, good.
That you should be you should be messaging. Anyway, Twitter, you know what Twitter is. Twitter is the megaphone of the people, and you can find Kerry Warbis on Twitter. How do they find you exactly if they're on Twitter? Kerry?
I am on Twitter as at Kerry Warbis, which is at KerriWarbis.
Pete Ficklin, how can you be found?
Exactly that, Pete Ficklin.
Smashing. And I'm there, but whatevs. And then, of course, you can find us, Dumpty Dum, collectively. And I have to say, special big ups to Ambridge Pony Club, to Purple Pumpkin, and to Pat Brown, who are going to be, as of next week, basically manning the helm of the good ship Dumpty Dum on Twitter, because I don't know what the hell I'm doing on that thing. Can't spell, can't do anything, but they do know what they're doing. So thank you, ladies, for volunteering for that. There is also Facebook. Go onto Facebook, you type in Dumpty Dum, you get Dumpty Dum on Facebook, and you have lots of fun. And I'll tell you another thing you get Glyn full of love and his pictures, because you know he always goes on these walks, and then he gives us a little bit of a talk whilst he's on a walk through his village, and he gives us his musings on the last week in Ambridge. You get the photographic evidence of Glyn on his walks if you type in Dumpty Dum on Facebook. Big up to the Flick at Posse Film Club. We're going to have another film club next month. First Sunday of every month is film club. If you go on to YouTube, type in Roy Field, and then you'll see Film Club, and you'll see it's lots of fun. It's only 30 minutes long, and I do love a little bit of Film Club action. If you would like to join us on a Film Club, obviously you can do that by going on to the Flick app and signing up, where we talk about what film we're going to watch, or you can email me at royfield@gmail.com, and we will facilitate you. We'll get you on Film Club. I don't know what piece of music we're going to play out to, so I'm going to put it to my two co-hosts. All right, podcasting husband, Pete Ficklin, would you like to potentially nominate a piece of music?
It's easy, isn't it? You and Kerry were going on a massive rant about how much you love Kraftwerk earlier on.
That was off mic.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying. There you go, Kraftwerk. Lovely. Does the metronomic repetitive grinding sound of Kraftwerk not speak to the relentless invasion and torture of, you know, of Philip Moss on not only the slaves but on, you know, the psyche of the listeners to the Archers?
I'm going to say no. However,
yeah, exactly.
Kerry and I have been known to do online dating, have we not, Kerry?
Yeah, not with each other.
The B-side to The Model, that big hit,
yep,
which was Computer Love,
okay,
would be utterly perfect.
Lovely.
So Computer Love it is.
Nice.
Which most people don't realise is actually a double A-side with The Model. Mm-hmm. But all the radio stations played The Model, so then they relegated it to being officially the B-side.
Lovely. I've seen them live. Very good.
I'm confused. So I got Silence for Irrelevance, and then that nonsense came out.
Well, nonsense.
Okay, fine. Self-indulgent guff. What do you want? I mean,
how was that self-indulgent by me talking about the piece of music that we're playing out, giving it some context?